The Bloody Truth by Stephen Hill. Chapter 2. The Problem with Atonement. If you've ever heard someone explain atonement as at one meant, you've heard one of the most repeated but least accurate definitions in modern church language. It's clever, memorable, and largely misleading. The word atonement is not a direct translation from the Hebrew scriptures. In fact, it's an English invention coined centuries ago to express the idea of making man and God one. But here's the problem. Under the Old Covenant, the sacrifices called atonement never did make man and God one. They provided only a temporary covering, a protective shield of sorts, so that God's presence could remain among His people. Old Covenant sacrifices were not bridges to God. They were temporary barriers against the consequences of sin and death. The Hebrew picture, kafar. The original Hebrew word most often translated atonement is kafar, which means to cover, to purge, or to protect. It's the same term that God used in Genesis 6:14 when instructing Noah to cover the ark with pitch, tar. The purpose wasn't to make the ark prettier. It was to make it waterproof, to shield and preserve life inside. That is the picture that God chose to communicate. Kafar is a protective covering, not a payment to settle an account. The sacrificial blood acted like Noah's pitch, shielding the people, the sacred space, and the covenant relationship from the corrupting effects of sin and the threat of death. Covering more than people. Sacrifices weren't just for people. Leviticus records atonement being made for altars, the tabernacle, the sanctuary, and even houses. Exodus 30:10, Leviticus 16:16, 33, Leviticus 14:53. Obviously, none of these could sin. They were inanimate objects. What they could do was become defiled or unfit for sacred use in God's presence. When you read those verses with the correct definition, protective, cleansing, covering, the picture changes completely. The goal wasn't moral forgiveness for furniture. It was restoring those items to a state suitable for the holy space where God dwelt. This, of course, served as a continual and ever-present reminder to God's people of His otherness and their need for and reliance on Him. Thus, He shall make atonement for the holy place, because of the uncleanness of the people of Israel, and because of their transgressions, all their sins. Leviticus 16:16. The holy place itself needed covering, showing that this is about sacred fitness, not moral guilt. Modern readers often assume that Israel's sacrificial system was unique, but in fact, it stood within the broader landscape of Second Temple Judaism. The Dead Sea Scrolls, for instance, show that sacrifices were understood less as penalties and more as purifications. In 1 QS, Community Rule 1, blood rites are described as cleansing the people so that God's presence could remain among them, not as payments made to turn away divine anger. Philo of Alexandria, a first-century Jewish philosopher, also wrote that sacrifices were symbols of the purification of life. This Jewish context confirms that when Christ and his apostles spoke of blood, they meant cleansing, protection, and life, not currency intended to pay judicial penalties, not always bloody. We often assume that every Old Covenant sacrifice involved blood, but this is not the case. Scripture records multiple ways atonement could be made without the shedding of blood. A payment of silver, Exodus 30:15-16. A measure of fine flour, Leviticus 5:11. Oil, Leviticus 14:29. The scapegoat sent into the wilderness alive, Leviticus 16:10. Incense offerings, Numbers 16:46. Treasures from war plunder, Numbers 31:50. Blood was common, but not exclusive. God even made allowances for the poor, telling them to offer birds or grain instead of lambs or goats if necessary, Leviticus 5. This reveals something important about God's heart. The key wasn't the market value of the sacrifice. It was the faith and obedience expressed through giving what one could. His goal was to preserve the relationship, not to exact a uniform payment, the annual reset. Despite all of these offerings, Israel's entire covenant relationship with God had to be reset every year on the so-called Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. Blood was sprinkled, sacred space was cleansed, and the people were ceremonially purified so that God's presence would remain among them for another year. The tabernacle, and later the temple, was not just a worship space. In many ways, it was a slaughterhouse. Historical estimates suggest that in Jesus' day, more than 250,000 lambs could be sacrificed during Passover alone. It's easy to recoil at the bloodiness of it all, But to the Israelites, this was not gore. It was life. They understood a truth most modern people overlook. In this present world, life is sustained only through the death of something else. The sacrificial system was a vivid reminder of this reality, woven into worship itself. From the beginning, God used sacrifice to teach that life comes only through death, pointing to a greater sacrifice to come. However, as we'll see, the necessity of death for life is merely temporary and will one day be a thing of the past. The antidote foreshadowed. Every lamb, goat, or bull offered in Israel's history was more than a religious ritual. It was a living symbol of the antidote that humanity needed. Sin had corrupted. Death had conquered. The only remedy was innocence for sin, life for death. The blood of a spotless animal represented innocent life, and blood is unique in that it embodies both the physical and the spiritual. These sacrifices were never meant to be permanent solutions. They were placeholders, year after year, until the true antidote could be given once for all. That day came when our champion shed his blood for all of creation. Chapter 2. Key takeaways. Atonement, Hebrew kafar, means protective covering, not payment. Sacrifices cleansed sacred space and preserved God's presence among his people. God allowed multiple non-bloody offerings, showing his desire for faith, not payment. 1. Also known as Manual of Discipline, a significant text from the Dead Sea Scrolls, outlining the rules and regulations of a Jewish sect.